We know the Indiana Pacers were interested in DeAndre Ayton at the trade deadline when Domantas Sabonis was still on that team. He's no longer there, but is there something that could be worked out? We stay on the Ayton trade beat today. Aaron Edwards is here to give his thoughts on everything that has come out about this team since they lost. We'll dive into all of it on today's Locked On Suns.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member covering the Suns for the past five seasons and a writer at Suns.com and Dime Magazine. Thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen today and every day. The offseason just getting started. Tons of reporting, even here just in week one. So obviously, do not go anywhere. If you're finding us on your favorite podcast platform, hit follow, hit subscribe. Have the pod show up in your feed every single day. If you're finding us on YouTube, a big thank you. Welcome to the channel. Hit subscribe. That's the best way to support the show. Leave a comment down below letting me know what you think about everything that has come out. I've gotten your thoughts on Ayton. I've gotten your thoughts on Kevin Durant. Just tell me what you're feeling about the Suns team as we head into the offseason right now. Aaron Edwards is here. He is a writer at All Caps NBA over on the Take Line YouTube channel. Aaron, we had our sort of therapy session last week after Game 7. We're kind of moving through all of this stuff. We've had some reporting that I've given my thoughts on regarding the Suns, whether that is a potential rift between Ayton and Monty or the idea that Kevin Durant might be on the move. But let's start with the Ayton, the status that he has here right now, because I think that's kind of at the center of all of this is like, do both sides even want to make this work? And I think that was what I came away from that Bleacher Report story thinking about is like, okay, I mean, the only reason you could ever see Monty or James Jones or anybody here not wanting Ayton back, it's not about talent because they're not really going to replace him unless this KD thing is actually legit. It's going to be about the relationship stuff. It's going to be about, can he get better? Is he going to bring it every day and all that stuff? So do you think that there was something serious between the two of those guys? And do you think that that could actually play a part in Ayton eventually leaving?
First, let me start. How weird is this, right?
Like, it's bizarre.
The last 2 years, like, we were just kind of just in the dumps. And now this offseason, we have jersey photoshops, team drama, and people actually care about it. It's like all so bizarre that we were just getting our ass kicked for 10 years and Booker was just having to put up 30 on bad teams. And now we're talking about like stuff that the Lakers used to deal with. Like, it just seems really bizarre, like having to deal with good team stuff now and team drama and just having to hear like stuff that other teams had to deal with.
The idea of like, what should the Suns do to continue to compete as a title contender is like an insane question to start a podcast off with.
Yes, it's just so weird that we're in this situation now. But to answer the question, I think that I don't think Ayton could have stopped cold turkey, like what he was, like what he still sort of is sometimes. So I think like, yeah, Monty probably had to be like, hey, play basketball, like do what you're here for. Like, Ayton played hard this year and he played really well, but I still think like there was no way he was going to stop being what he is, just automatically cold turkey, just stop being just the kind of dude that disappears sometimes. I just think we were asking him to kind of float upstream every once in a while, and you have to kind of stay on a dude like that. So I could imagine that Monty would probably have to stay on Ayton to just be out there and have his head in the game every once in a while.
I mean, the thing that I come down on with it is like, to me, Ayton, or I'm sorry, Monty was like, kind of first and foremost, like, we were all surprised by the X's and O's stuff that he was able to do. That was kind of thought to be like his weakness as a coach when he first got here. He was brought in to build a culture, to hold people accountable, to just set expectations for the young guys and just grow their game over time. It makes perfect sense that that guy would have a problem with the way that Ayton is sometimes. You know, like, it's not a shocker that he would be the guy most frustrated by that, even more than James Jones or even the players on the team. Like, you can tell Mikhail loves Ayton. Like, I think that they have a great relationship. I think, you know, Book, I don't have a great feel for it. Some of the stuff he said after game seven was a little weird. I think James Jones came out and said, you know, he met our expectations. Like, we are happy with where DA is as a player. It feels like it's very believable to me that it could be a Monty thing. But I also feel like if you're giving a guy that much money and committing to him for 4 or 5 seasons, then, I mean, I think at this point, the 5-year thing's kind of out. I don't think they're doing that. So the 4-year idea of, like, they're either going to match an offer that he goes and gets, or they're going to trade him, I feel like is where we are. To me, it's like, has to be a pretty understandable red flag if you don't know if that guy's going to get better and keep putting the work in, and he's going to fade away sometimes. Like, I mean, I don't know. Not a lot of us in our jobs would get paid a big old raise if we were going to, like, start to slack off the next day. I don't know. I think it's a reasonable concern, even if the talent is there and they've been winning with him still.
Yeah, I think CP3 showing up is the only reason we're having this conversation. I think if he doesn't show up, Ayton doesn't turn into this at least somewhat consistent basketball player. I think that he just becomes a dude that jumps around the league a lot because he doesn't get the playoff notoriety, and nobody gets to see him hoop in the playoffs and how he's able to kind of change games sometimes. So I think without Chris Paul and without just, like, the winning that came with bringing Chris Paul to the team, Ayton is pretty much Nerlens Noel career. Like, I really just think that he doesn't make the jump because he still has a tough time catching the ball. Sometimes he got a lot better, but it was abysmal for a really long time. And I just think that he really doesn't make that jump until and somewhat like all-star, really good big man until Chris Paul gets here. And we wouldn't even be having this conversation. So I think him thinking that he can get 5 years from us is just wild, considering we probably would have let him go if Chris Paul never came.
So two things on that. One is, I think that you're touching on something that I don't feel like fans necessarily get all the time. And I think I agree with you, because there's a lot of people, every time that I cast doubt on Ayton as a player, like, you know, I think there's part of me that feels like he's already kind of reached his prime. And whenever I get, not his prime, his ceiling. And whenever I say something like that, I mean, I don't think he can't get better, but I feel like we would have seen it by now if he was really going to take that next jump. And people always will come back and say, like, okay, well, that season, either his rookie year or even the year where he got suspended with Rubio, he was producing more and he was still efficient and this and that. And I'm like, if you think that's the way that the Suns are going to continue to win, the way that Ayton was running, was getting his points and production at that point, like, I don't know what to tell you. That those things don't go together. There's a reason that he was able to get those opportunities. It's because there was no better option. And if there's no better option, your team's probably not that good, which is why they lost a bunch of games. Like, I don't think we've seen the skill stuff there to really believe that he can get to that next level. The other part of me, though, the other part of what you said that's interesting to me, though, is, and this is something I've been talking about on Twitter with a few people, is the 5-year max idea. Like, the only reason that you don't, if you're Ayton and his agents, that you don't sign a 4-year max last year, which is what the Suns say they offered, although his agents say that they didn't, so who knows, is if you think you're still going to get the 4-year max this summer. Do you buy the idea that there actually are teams who will give him that 4 years this summer? Because everything we've heard between, like, I know Woj came out and said right away that there were teams, and then Jake Fisher in that Bleacher Report thing said the same thing, but, like, those lists have just been, like, the teams with cap space. We're not hearing, like, concrete, this team is so out of their minds in love with Ayton, and they're going to go give him an offer right away. I know we're early on still, but do you think there really will be that, or do you think that there's another option here where it's like the Suns actually get him on less than a max somehow after all this?
I think Dallas does it tomorrow. I think there are a couple teams that will give him the 4 years that he wants. I'm not sure about the money that he wants, but I can see, like, teams like the Magic or the Blazers, or like there are just a couple teams out there that will give Ayton those years that he needs. And the Mavs are kind of just at the top of the list. They're getting killed on the boards, and he wouldn't have to do all of the work on the boards like he has to do with us, because it does make him look so bad when Mikal and Crowder just aren't helping him on the board. So I think like he would just have the help that he needs, and Dallas doesn't have a big, and they would just make that deal in a second. So I really think that the Suns are going to have to either match an offer from potentially them or a lot of other people, because there are so many people from what I'm seeing that really think that they have a shot at him.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's interesting that I do think I lean toward what you're saying, you know, there's some teams like Dallas that would have to clear out a little bit of money. There's some teams that already have the money. Whatever it is, though, what's weird about this season and this free agency is a lot of the teams who are going to have space also need a center. Like, it lined up that way, you know, by the grace of God for DA and his team, because, like, you know, if it was various seasons in the past, it's like, you know, the Sixers having cap space wouldn't have done him a lot of good. The Wolves having cap space wouldn't have done him a lot of good. And now it's like, you know, 5-6 teams that have money and have nothing at that five spot that actually opens up a possibility for him to go there. It's not going to be a winning team, most likely, unless it is a group like Dallas or Atlanta or something, but the money will be there. I really do believe that there will be at least one team who can just give him the 4-year max and force the Suns to make a decision on it. Let's move forward, though. I want to go back to what you said about how crazy this stuff is, because that's where my mind keeps going when it comes to the KD of it all. I just, like, I did a whole podcast yesterday about it, because I'm like, I buy it enough that I have to talk about it, but I'm like, it feels like I was floating up here in the room watching myself do the podcast, because it doesn't feel like a legit thing that's going on. So let's just sit in that craziness for a little bit. First, though, guys, today's show brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the planet, and it tastes just like a candy bar. That's really the bottom line. Built granola bars are back. They actually just launched. You might have heard me talking about them just a couple weeks ago, but they went out of stock that quickly. They're back, though, and there are more flavors than before. 3, to be exact. Chocolate peanut butter, chocolate coconut, and white chocolate berry. If you want to try all 3, you can get a mixed box, which is usually what I'll do for any of them that I order, because I like so many flavors. You can mix and match that way. They're different, though, from bars, regular Built bars, or Built puffs. Built granola bars are loaded with granola, making it the perfect combination of crunch and chew. But just like bars and puffs, these ones are also packed with protein and covered in 100% chocolate. That should be obvious by now. You've never heard me talk about a single Built bar that doesn't have all of that good stuff. With 150 calories, 15 grams of protein, and only 4 grams of sugar, Built granola bars will change your world. Also, for Arizona purposes, they don't melt as easily. That's a nice bonus. Sometimes you bring the chocolatey ones, unless you're going straight inside, you do have to worry about that. So Built granola can be that little extra bonus for those of us who live here in the Valley. So if you've been waiting for a healthy and delicious granola bar rather than the sugary crap that's usually on the grocery store shelves, this is your time. Head to Built.com right now to get the Built granola bars. 3 delicious flavors to try. Do not miss out. Go to Built.com. And when you make your purchase, use the code LOCK15 to get 15% off your order. That's promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right, Aaron. So I did a show about Kevin Durant yesterday, just to remind folks who maybe missed that show, although I go into much more depth on this whole thing in that one. So I would definitely recommend going back if you did miss it. But the bottom line is Kyrie Irving is not somebody that the Nets have any interest in giving a big, long extension to. And the other big sort of news from the piece at the New York Daily News was that KD has not talked to Brooklyn since the end of the season, which in our, whatever we want to call diva NBA star phase that we're in, that's the textbook first step on this stuff, is you stop talking to your team. So, like you said, it's pretty insane. So how seriously are you taking it? Let me start there. How seriously are you actually taking this?
I mean, I've made fun of too many, like, Knicks fans and, like, Laker fans to, like, go full head on into it. But you got to listen now. Like, he's talked about how much he likes Booker so much and how cool he is with Chris Paul and, like, how close he and Monty are. And, yeah, like, he put this team together, and he was in contact with them the second he got there, and the second he was even kind of deciding to leave the Warriors. So he's in with the front office. He's like knows those people. He's cool with them. So the fact that he's freezing them out isn't nothing. So it just seems really like it would be irresponsible for James Jones not to send the flag out, like to just check to see what's going on. And yeah, it's hard not to get excited about it. Like, I don't really care what we would have to give up at that point, to be honest.
Yeah.
But it really does, like, it seems hard not to kind of perk your ears up at it with just how the NBA goes. It's really the first step in what happens with these things.
Yeah, I want to talk about that, how the NBA goes part of it. It was hilarious to me, though, because in the comments of that show, which, you know, predictably a lot of people listened to and were watching on YouTube because it's exciting, but a lot of people were in the comments going, I liked everything you said, but not giving up Cam. Can't give up Cam Johnson. Gotta keep Cam. Gotta have shooters around KD. I'm like, guys, like, you know, it's Kevin Durant. At this point, we're talking about how many first round picks do you want to give up? I feel like Mikal Bridges actually would be somebody that I would try pretty hard to not get rid of with something like that. But everybody else, I mean, you're not getting rid of Book. You're not getting rid of... actually, that might be it. Because I actually do think there's a part of it where you could do a Chris Paul thing here too. I don't think that's where this would go. I don't think the Nets would have much interest in that.
No.
But... you know, it's really like it's Book, and then to me, I would put Bridges there. And that's probably my untouchable list on this entire roster. Like, Cam Johnson is not going to be the difference between doing it and not doing it. Does it? I mean, like, the idea, though, in general, at the bottom of this is, if it's, again, we don't really know anything on the Suns side, and we won't. Like, this thing will drop, and it'll be Woj reporting it, and we will have never heard a single thing from the Suns side, because that's how all this stuff happens with the Suns. But does it, like, the idea of that, though, is like the team's going to get way older. Are you okay with, you know, if it is Ayton and Cam or something like that, your team is like, it's even more. We already felt like this was pretty all in for a short window here. And that would be even like doubling down on the next couple of seasons. Is that comfortable for you as a, I mean, we don't want this to just be a 2-year blip, but you also, it's Kevin Durant.
Yeah, I'm down for a 2-year blip if it means a championship. I'm sorry, like, yeah. I'm a Colts fan. So, like, I had one of the best teams of, like, the decade, and we had one Super Bowl to show for it. And I'm fine with that personally. Like, I'm not, I have no any interest in seeming like a Patriots fan or how good they had it. I'm fine with my one that I got to watch with my own eyes. And in this scenario, I would be fine with the one I got to watch with my own eyes. Like, sometimes you just have to have a lot of darkness after. And the Warriors kind of did it the opposite. They had like a generational like core, and we didn't have that. We had to kind of put it together like on our own. And they also got younger at the same time because they had the down year when they kind of just had a wash. They were like, this one's down. Like, we're just going to build through the draft and see what we come up with. And we don't have that. Like, we don't have the chance to do that. So I really just think if this is what you got to do to get your one and you're down to live with it, then do it.
I mean, it's kind of, you were talking about the Lakers a second ago, and we'll get to the DeAndre Ayton Pacers thing too, because I think that's still worth considering at the end of the show. But you talked about the Lakers. Like, I think the big story coming out of that, which is like going down in a blaze of, I don't even know if I want to say glory, but it's like they got a title. You know what I mean? Like, they signed LeBron and dealt with everything that came with that. They've gone through how many coaches? They traded their whole entire young core for Anthony Davis and whatever. I mean, they got a championship out of it. I agree with you, especially when you're the Suns. Like, you can't afford to be beggars can't be choosers, right? It's like you're going to really say, no, we want a championship, but not that way. You know what I mean? Like, that's not, I agree with you. I think you do whatever to get it done if it actually becomes real. The last thing I want to ask you, though, when it comes to the Lakers, when it comes to this situation, I mean, this has been a topic of conversation for a while in the NBA. It hasn't really affected the Suns much until now. Do you like the NBA being this way? Like, we have this cool story for two seasons, and then we're just, like, plunged into the insanity because that's just what it means to be, like, an elite NBA team right now is you got to deal with all this stuff. Do you like that about the league? Is it more fun to you? Is it less fun? Do you not care?
I don't mind the theater of it. I like how, well, I can't say quiet football is because it's mostly just a lot of people getting arrested. But I really like the theater is fine. Like we get paid to keep talking about it. Like if it was just as boring as football, we'd be grasping at straws and not really having much to talk about. So for like with that, like I like just having something to do during the off season. And
it's much better than how big of a thing the NFL combine is. Like the NBA combine comes and goes and like the draft nerds pay attention to it and they tell us what we need to know. And the NFL combine is like a content mill for like a month because there's nothing else going on. So I agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah. So like I like just having just around the clock NBA stuff because they give us this access. Like they're online, they're out here, like they're out in the streets, they're being dramatic, they're sending sub tweets to their teams. Like all of that is really fun. And it gets us going on who we can get out of this drama if somebody's unhappy. So I just think it makes fan bases, like it gives us more fun to with the game. But at the same time, I do like the other end with football where it's just like spring training. Everybody's got a shot. This is going to be fun. And when it comes to basketball, it's just, you just want a fun season and a fun team to watch. But with football, it's quiet. And then it's every Sunday, you're lined up in front and you're just hoping your team is the one that comes out.
I think the thing for me is it would have been cool to watch this team if they were able to get the job done this year to win one in a mostly homegrown way. I mean, I obviously know Chris Paul is a big part of that wasn't homegrown, but every other component would have been, and that would have been cool, especially in this era where it hasn't happened that way very often. But I also feel like if you want to be a great NBA team right now, it's kind of just the cost of doing business. Like, you can't choose not to engage with this stuff. And I guess my parting thought, and something I didn't hammer home enough, I think, on Thursday's episode about the KD stuff in depth, was outside of maybe Miami, because they're always flexible and they tend to pull a rabbit out of a hat when we're not expecting it, there's not a lot of teams right now that are flexible in terms of having young talent and salaries to trade that are also like genuine title contenders. That's not really a thing. Dallas, but like, that's a weird fit if I'm Kevin Durant to go play with somebody like one of the only guys in the league who can say that they are better than me. That's not a very attractive thing to go do in a city that's not very glamorous. Not that Phoenix is super glamorous, but it's closer to LA and it's nicer here. So I just think that's another, like, you have to factor that in. And if the Suns are going to play ball with this stuff, which they obviously are, they did it with Chris Paul, then they get elevated to that level that I don't think many other teams are really going to be on when KD looks around if he ends up doing that. So again, I don't know why I've said Kevin Durant on this podcast way more times than I would have expected this week. I'm going to be honest with you. It feels like an insane, like we will look so stupid if KD just like plays out the next 4 years in Brooklyn, and we'll just look back on this week and be like, we were all drunk. But still, we got to talk about it. We also have to continue to talk about other DA options, so we'll do that after a quick break. First, though, guys, today's show is brought to you by Locked On NBA Big Board. As the NBA draft rolls around, I know I was just making fun of the combine, but the bottom line is somebody has to pay attention to it. And Rafael Barlow, he was there. He's also, he lives overseas, so there's nobody out there that is more in person watching this stuff, scouting this stuff. He has the newsletter where he does video content, written content, scouting reports, mock drafts, all that good stuff. And then on the podcast, he breaks it down for you and he brings on guests every week. He's interviewed players, he's interviewed coaches. Like, it is your one-stop shop for NBA draft info. So as we roll toward draft day, whether the Suns have a pick or not, this stuff matters. Make sure you're listening to Locked On NBA Big Board. So we were texting before any of this KD insanity came up, Aaron, and I mean, some fans, I feel like we're already thinking about it. I hadn't been taking it seriously, so I was still, you know, at the bottom of the barrel, scratching for trades. I did a podcast the other day where I was like, here's the best possible Ayton trade that I think makes sense, and it was like Capella and a pick, and now that looks silly if this bigger stuff's on the table, but we don't know much about that Nets situation enough to like treat it as the number one thing. So there's other options on the table that I think are interesting. And one of the ones you brought up is Miles Turner. So we knew Sabonis for Ayton, multiple people have said, whether that's like Gambo here locally or Zach Lowe nationally, whatever, who say that that's pretty real. I know the Locked On Pacers host on our network had that too on his show at the time. We talked about it a little bit. That works straight up. Like Ayton on a sign and trade for Miles Turner because they're a below the cap team. That trade just works. So I'm sure there would have to be probably more. Let me ask you, what do you think? Is that a trade that's fair straight up? What else would have to be added? And what do you think Miles would look like in Phoenix?
I think it would work straight up. Especially if it's just about the money at that point. Like, it's just the perfect thing, because I know the Pacers would probably pay Ayton the money that he wants, and we'd know that we're getting a decent big. We'd have to know that. I think we'd have to know that we're making another move or something, because I just really think it just sits us exactly where we were. Honestly, like, it'll be more, like, not useful, but he runs better. Like, I really think, well, Ayton runs hard, but I just think in our offense-wise, it would just give us a lot more options. I think he'd get on the train defensively. And I just think his shooting, like willingness even, is spreads the floor a lot better. And it just wouldn't cram the paint as much as it has. Because I just think like Chris Paul hasn't been able to get to his spots we've seen toward the end. And I just think the paint was just kind of spread out. And we just have to hope that Mikal Bridges makes the jump to where he can kind of put the ball on the floor and get to the rim. And I just think as a big that can spread the floor, it just makes our offense run a lot smoother.
Yeah, Turner's taken over four a game for the past three seasons. He's a career 35% three-point shooter. That's always been a part of his game in a way that it never was for Ayton. I did a big dive on the stats side of things comparing Ayton, Capella, and Turner, because I feel like those are probably the two other big men who the Suns could maybe get back directly in a trade that would allow them to replace Ayton in the trade rather than having to sign somebody else. And so one thing that's weird is any advanced stats stuff you look at, like I have access to the B-ball index guys stuff, which is honestly, I don't really understand how they get the ratings a lot of the time, but they like go through and they classify like actual skill sets and they give players a rating rather than just having it be like a number that they throw out. It's like, what's their rim roll rating, and then they give you a number and you can compare it. So, you know, it's objective. It's them like trying to do some math and grading it out, but it's at least something to look at, especially for players who don't know very well. So those types of numbers, in addition to just like defensive, like on off on defensive rating or different stuff like that, none of that stuff likes Ayton. It never has. And and that makes it hard to grade, because I think anyone like all of us listening, you and I talking right now, we know Ayton's better than those numbers show, but it's also just makes it hard when you're comparing. So those numbers say Turner's just straight up a better defender than Ayton. I don't think that necessarily. I think he might be slightly better at what he does well. I don't think you're getting the versatility that Ayton has. That would make me nervous. Like, is Miles Turner going to guard Giannis in a final series? I don't know if that's what is best for him. Now, you can get that elsewhere, but like, that's a big change. But on the positive side of things, I was surprised to see, even before the coaching switch, when Carlisle took over, so basically the last season and this season, you had the team making more of an effort to make Turner like a rim roller, like actually getting downhill, finishing lobs, getting to the basket, and that type of stuff. I'm looking now at his shot distance. So it's gone up a little bit, like 3 percentage points from the the playoff years when they were competing every year to the past couple seasons. He's gone up just a bit, but that would be good on the Suns side. I just think, to me, the two biggest concerns are, aside from all of that role stuff, which I do agree with you, like, that could be sorted out. One, he's injured a lot.
That's my biggest thing.
That's a risky thing. And two, I think that, like, I don't know Indiana very well, but, like, there's been a question about his level of engagement, too. So if you're bringing a guy in who doesn't fully buy in, some of that might have been playing with Sabonis, but injury and, you know, comes and goes with his focus, it's like, you know, some of that's the same thing that Ayton struggles with, plus now you have this injury thing. I don't think there's a perfect answer, but those would be my two reservations about Turner.
Yeah, I think that Turner being stuck in Indiana is probably part of it. I just think a change of scenery changes a lot of people sometimes. And I think going into a situation where the playoffs is a real possibility, he hasn't been there in a while. Yeah. And I think, like, since the bubble even. So I just think that having even the possibility of making a playoff run or deep slash like finals run, I just think you come in with a different level of intensity that you probably have since. I just think he went into some of those seasons knowing that he was on the Pacers, kinda. And that he
was playing out of position basically and it didn't work. Like all the stuff we knew, I'm sure he knew.
Yeah. So I just think maybe the change of scenery and the injury thing was always just gonna be the bigger thing for me. He's missed a lot of games. And a lot of the stuff that Ayton missed for were just light kind of just bumps and bruises kind of things, but it was never really a serious injury. So that would probably be like my biggest hangup.
Yeah, the Pacers haven't won a playoff game since 2018. They were in 2019 and in the bubble, but they got swept both times. That's rough. You think they can get Jalen Smith back in the deal too? Or
I don't like talking about that draft. We can just act like it never happened now.
It's hilarious to me that Sticks and Tyrese Haliburton are on the same team now. It's just like poetic justice that we all have to be reminded every time we look at the Pacers roster that screw up was front and center.
I mean, Ayton going to Dallas would be probably
yeah, that's
100
true.
Times as bad as that.
Well, it's hilarious because like two of the possible teams are Dallas and Atlanta, which are just, I mean, the Atlanta thing, like the Suns were never going to take Trae Young. At five, it was kind of a surprise, like almost like a reach in that draft, but it would just be funny. The last thing I'll say on this one is I do think, well, it's hard because like the Pacers aren't in any jeopardy of going to the luxury tax. So it's not like they're really worried about money, but also like they don't spend money. So upgrading that 13 or whatever million dollars next season and the commitment of like all those seasons after it, the difference from Turner to Ayton in their sort of cap sheet and whatever, that could make me feel like they would want the Suns to give something, but also the Suns are doing them the favor by saying we're not going to match this contract. So yeah, maybe it just would be straight up. Maybe the Suns would say, hey, Miles Turner's never produced anywhere near the level that Ayton has in the playoffs, so you got to give us something. I don't really know what that would be. The Pacers don't have a lot of stuff that's appealing to me. I know people have said Chris Duarte, they're not giving that guy up. He just made an all rookie team and he's a rookie. Like that, I don't see them doing that. So I don't know. I think it's one to keep an eye on. We know the Pacers seem to like DeAndre Ayton. I think that Rick Carlisle tends to be a guy who is liked to have a big man, like a real big man. And this year is the last year on Turner's contract. So it's definitely on my mind. I don't know how much I love it, but it's there. Is this the one you like the most of all the non-KD, non-craziness options?
Yeah, the games I've seen with Miles Turner have just been like, he just does stuff. You're like, oh, I didn't know he can do that. And it's just like, oh, I didn't know he can do that too. And it's just a game of those. Like, he'll do a crossover and pull up from mid-range. And you'll be like, whoa, like, wow, I didn't know he could pull that off. And I just think having a player like that, like, we need somebody, like, I don't necessarily want it to be a big, but just people that can put the ball on the floor and get fouled or get to the rim or make a move. Like, we just don't have any. And we found out in really embarrassing fashion that we didn't have any. So I just think anybody that can handle the ball and get a bucket is just needed.
Yeah, I get you. That is, he's only 26 too, so that's a bonus. Like he's not Capella, who's I think 28 going on 29, or he's not, you know, JaVale McGee if they went that route next season as their starter. Like he maintains that flexibility, that ability to keep getting better. He will be a free agent, so you could move on. Like that flexibility is still there. He's young. He could be traded again, et cetera. So I think it's interesting. I would prefer Kevin Durant personally. I don't know about you, but that'll do it for us today, guys. He is Aaron Edwards. He's a writer at All Caps NBA. Go watch that show. Go subscribe to the Take Line YouTube channel. Aaron's with us every week, but give him some love over there as well. That'll do it for the week. I'll be back Monday. We'll see if anything else crazy happens. I might give you some more thoughts on whatever happens in this Dallas Golden State thing, because I actually think it's important for the Suns. I think like who they have to beat and what they need to look like does matter, and these conference finals have been really weird. So we might go that direction. We might bring guests on. Who knows? This offseason's already shown us can't plan more than one day ahead at a time. That's it for today's Locked On Suns. Now go make Locked On NBA your second listen to catch up on everything else going on around the league.